Hello and welcome to Architecture Masters at Home. I'm Owen Wainhouse.
And I'm Tamsie Thompson.
Today we're joined by Giovanna Barassi, Director of the Canadian Centre for Architecture in Montreal, Canada. Giovanna joined the CCA in 2005 as the Curator for Contemporary Architecture, going on to become Chief Curator in 2014, and then the Director of the Centre at the beginning of 2020. Having first trained as an architect in Milan in her native Italy, she went on to work as editor of the Italian architecture magazine Lotus International. Giovanna has an impressive track record of exhibitions, but it was a highly acclaimed 2011 CCA exhibition, Imperfect Health, The Medicalization of Architecture, co-curated with the centre's previous director, Mirko Zadani, that rather presciently explored projects and research in relation to health issues, including disease and epidemics. Indeed, as well as its strong exhibitions and curatorial programme, research is central to the CCA's mission of making architecture a public concern. The CCA was founded in 1979 by the Canadian architect and philanthropist Phyllis Lambert, consciously as an international centre for architecture, rather than, say, a museum of architecture or an institute for architects. Her family's business interests included the Seagram Company. In 1954, Phyllis Lambert, while still in her 20s, was instrumental in persuading the company to change architects and commission Mies van der Rohe to design the firm's US headquarters, resulting in the iconic Seagram Building in Midtown Manhattan. Whilst the CCA's building in Montreal is temporarily closed, including its museum galleries, bookstore and study room, the CCA continues its public programme, holding conversations and actively publishing research and discussions it's involved with. So today we join Giovanna down the line from her home in Montreal.
Hello and welcome to Giovanna. We're really pleased that you're able to join us today, or virtually join us today. I wondered if we could start just by hearing a little bit about the founding of the CCA. I guess, historically, like the UK, Canadian architecture was a fairly male-dominated industry, but you were actually founded in the 70s by a woman.
Yeah, the CCA was founded by Phyllis Lambert in 1979, so we just did last year our 40 years birthday. So I would say we're still a quite young institution, maybe not like a toddler, but still a young institution. And yeah, Phyllis started it as an institution that didn't have really a model in that moment when it was founded. There are other institutions that are centered on, specifically dedicated to architecture, who came about in the same period, but somehow her ambition was to really create a center that will, and I think in the name, the for architecture is extremely important, because somehow it was really from the beginning the idea that this will be a center that had to contribute to the discourse of on architecture, somehow how the public understand, the general public will understand the importance and the relevancy of architecture in their society or in daily life, but somehow also to be a place that will support scholars, thinkers, architects themselves to really advance their thinking. And she was trained as an architect, she practiced as an architect, and she was also collecting herself early on, curating also the collection that her family had at the inside the Seagram building. Also, yeah, interested in the tools that architects use, like drawings and photography and books, as not as a collector will collect them in a kind of aesthetic visual interest, but really very much as documents or pieces that will show the kind of ideas that the author had in putting together that piece. So from the beginning, this is why I think the institution was quite special at that time, is that it had an editorial ambition, a curatorial ambition, a research ambition, and some of all these areas, they actually I would say maybe at the beginning worked in a kind of more discrete way. Now they are much more interrelated and integrated, but somehow all these different parts were part of the idea that that was this new center, like this center. So this is also why I think she decided that that was the name more than a museum or an institution and things like this.
There's something very inclusive about the naming of it, as you say, as a center rather than a museum or an institution.
Yeah.
It has a kind of collaborative sense to it.
Exactly. So, yeah, I think in that sense, she was certainly in the field of architecture, a pioneer in creating such an institution. And I think that's the reason also she got a few years ago the Golden Lion at Career, given to her by Rem Koolhaas at the Venice Biennale. I think the kind of line of Rem was that she didn't make herself architecture as an architect, but she made architects. And so I think somehow that summarized in a nice way the kind of ambition that she had and that is still very much in the center.
And the mission remains the same now as it was when it was set up?
Yeah, the mission is always the same. It's making architecture a public concern. Obviously, each director, and even Phyllis herself as a director, has kind of interpreted that in slightly different ways. But I think, yeah, that's still the center. I think the key issue is how you interpret the word architecture, how you interpret the word public, and even concern. So I think that is a kind of, it's a mission that is given to us in working inside institution and understanding how we relate to the different words differently, also in accordance to the context that evolve in these years.
And sort of brings me very nicely onto the next sort of thing I want to explore with you is about sort of the practice of architecture in Canada and how it's sort of similar in some ways to the UK in that it's a protected title, as I understand it, in the same way that it is in the UK, but that it's sort of licensed and dealt with in various territories individually rather than as a kind of central body. Is that right?
Yeah, Canada is a very, it's a vast territory. You know, go from Montreal to Vancouver is a 5 hours flight. And the climate changed quite rapidly going east to west. And you cannot even imagine what it means going north. So the majority of the population is concentrated on the border with the United States. And then is concentrated on few urban areas. The biggest city is Toronto, and then Vancouver, then Montreal, and some other few other ones, Calgary or Alberta and Winnipeg and so on. So the culture is quite different in all these different provinces, and we also have, for example, in Quebec, even the difference that is language divide somehow. In Quebec, the official language is French. So if you want to practice, you will also need to do it in French as an architect. So let's say there is a Canadian Association of Architecture that is kind of national. At the same time, there are very strong local associations with very also different priorities. And it's also a vast country that has, the population is quite small, it's 35 million. And I think the architects, I don't know the numbers now, but the total number like a few years ago was like 15,000 overall Canada. So it's still a kind of small group, I would say, of professional that are operating in a very vast country with also, climate obviously is a key thing here in terms of like what are the possibility of even building or experimenting and so on. So I think it's not easy to talk about a kind of Canadian architecture. I think both in the kind of scope but also in a kind of, I will not say aesthetic, but somehow as It's not easy to imagine a kind of like one unique voice. And not that in other countries, but somehow we have lived this in European country that, you know, that has been a moment of, you know, Swiss architecture and Dutch architecture. And I don't know, now it's there was a British time and maybe connected to a kind of minimalist idea. And it's not an easy thing to imagine for Canada, in also because Canada is a country where even defining what Canadian is quite complex and slippery sometimes. And many times people tend to describe Canadian things as a kind of negation. We are not like the United States in this way. We are not like the British in this other way. We are not European in this. I think that's very visible in also in visual art, of like coming up with a kind of sense of shared, I would not say values, because I think that's very present in Canada, but like that they will transform these ideas in a kind of visual way. It's not an easy thing.
Yes, I guess you have, as you said, the kind of the size of the territory, the range of the climate, the various cultures within it as well.
Let's say that's the potentiality that an institution like the CCA has, and then it will be nice to see more like this in the world, because somehow we very much respect the kind of academic research, and we also support that. Like we have many, you know, fellowship and grants for scholars to come and work with the CCA collection or work around topics that we are interested in. So, for example, now we are working with a group of scholars on Africa, and somehow this is a new territory also for us. We have some holding in the collections. We have been acquiring more things lately, but somehow we don't have an expertise in this field inside institutions. So one of the idea is that how the institution learn, and the only way is that the first things to do is really to observe the landscape, understand who are the key players in for example, as African historians on the continent and in other places, which are the network that we will need to understand, which are the institutions that have been working, where the collection are. So the one of the things that is important to acknowledge, I think, that an institution in that sense is very different from an academic body, is that the institution has to continue to evolve and somehow learn. And so which are the projects will be put in place that also allow this learning process for the institution. So this is why when I say research, to me, research is multifaceted at the CCA, because it's not only research on topic, it's also research on how we make things, how we understand things, and so on. So, but somehow then it has this kind of potentiality of really being in between academic field or between academia and the public, and somehow understand how to make that connection. And the fact that we consider our first public the architects or the architecture historian and so on also changed very much the nature of what we curatorially do. This is why even the exhibition for us has a very different meaning than an institution will just say, okay, now I'm exhibiting what I have or what I have studied for a general public. So it's not that we don't want a general public, and that's the reason why in the last 15 years, and we will continue in the future, we also try really to tackle issues that are for society at large. So the question of health, the question of happiness, the ecological or environmental issues. We will now look for, we now started this series of movies on kind of like changing the urban conditions. So the first one is about homeless and the kind of rising number of people who will not be able to afford a home in the future. The second one that we are in the kind of editorial process now is the about singletons. So the fact that more and more people live alone, and sometimes is a choice, sometimes is a condition you find yourself. So, and the third one will be about the aging population. So through addressing topics that I think are relevant to everyone is also a way of bringing in a public that is larger than architects and historians and so on. But at the same time, we think that, yeah, our main public are the architects. So and it's not our role to nor teach them, nor educate them, nor imposing things. It's more about, okay, we think this is important and you should look at it. Create your own opinion, create your own way of dealing with, but somehow we cannot escape from the fact that the, you know, cities are becoming now a kind of real estate. And I think in London you see this more than ever, but real estate opportunity. And what is your role there? It's like, what means affordability when, you know, kids at 22 years old are already in debt for I don't know many years. I don't know many money, so nobody will be able to buy anything in the future. So how you understand your practice, like if this is the context?
I think that's the thing we really try and address and we find really interesting is this idea that actually architecture is, as you say, more than just about buildings, but about wider sociological issues and societal issues that people feel happy to engage with often as a broad public, you know, feel they... whereas certainly in London, sometimes people feel able to engage in those broader questions, but somehow maybe not in the more detailed kind of architectural questions, maybe. It's.
I guess that brings us on to hearing more about you. And we're always interested in hearing as much about the people in the profession as anything else. And you joined the CCA as a curator in 2005?
Yes, I joined it as a curator of contemporary in 2005. I worked in 2003-2004 for an exhibition that was curated by Mirko Zardini, the previous director. And it was called Sense of the City, and was a show that was challenging this kind of, again, a kind of primary, this idea that you know, you can experience architecture mainly as a visually. And so it was really bringing the idea of the senses and a kind of sensorial approach to urbanism as a different way of rethinking the city. And I have worked with Mirko on a show that was in 2003 at the Triennale in Milano that was about asphalt, and somehow really starting from this very banal thing like asphalt that is basically global and that we don't really pay so much attention, but somehow was an attempt also through a kind of a material culture to tell a very different story about how city has evolved. And the idea of hygiene, the idea of even, let's say, materiality of the city, the idea of soundscape and so on. So that show became a kind of base for evolving then in this sense of the city at the CCA. And I have met Mirko because at the magazine Lotus International, I went to work there because when I finished, I studied architecture, and my master thesis was with the editor-in-chief. My main advisor was the editor-in-chief of Lotus, Pierluigi Nicolin. And so before going, you know, doing a internship or joining architectural office, I decided to go to work at Lotus for 1 year as as really deepening a little bit more the kind of editorial work and research. And yeah, and then that became 8 years of my life. every year I thought I will, go back to the practice really. But then more and more, I guess, was difficult because of, in this digital new way of practicing, I was always a little bit then late with all this kind of new 3D rhino or things that I was not learning. So somehow I felt my re-entering in the practice will be very difficult. But at the same time, I was very much enjoying looking at architecture and talking with architects really to discuss their ideas more than being myself in the practice.
Interesting there, I mean, talking about kind of going back into practice and about, I mean, one of the things we quite interested in London really is this idea about people moving to London and London attracting talent really from around the world to work in the architecture profession. And you talked a little bit earlier on about the practice of architecture in Canada. And I just wonder maybe whether it's because you're not Canadian, you can hear, I guess, from your accent, whether being an outsider allows you to see into the culture or maybe to see into the practice in a way maybe that a Canadian wouldn't. Do you think there's anything there?
Yeah, sure. I'm Italian, I'm not Canadian. And I think
are you practicing then, just jumping in, your Italian's your first language then? You presumably in speaking French in a day-to-day setting in the museum and in the center.
Yeah, Montreal is a very bilingual city, so you continuously jump from one language to the other one. Somehow it's very normal that people even in the same sentence mix a word coming from, and I have to say, for me, not being nor French nor English my main language, is actually very good, because if I don't have it in one language, I can go get it in my brain in the other one. So it's a kind of handy system of like using two languages, even if you kind of like not know them perfectly. So,
but that sense of being from outside the country, that's an interesting.
Yeah, I have to say the incredible things, also considering what is going on in Europe, the incredible things in Canada is that there is, because it's a country that is actually made by all these people who came here, if it's not you, was your father or your grandfather, there is a very high sense of inclusion. So somehow you don't feel like so non-Canadian at the same time. It's very interesting because of this bilingualism, there are only few Canadians that I met that are perfectly bilingual in French and English. So even the Francophone, they will feel like a little bit foreign in their own country when they have to talk English or the other way around. So there is a high level of acceptance and tolerance. So you don't really, feel foreigner somehow here. So, but I still think that to me, if I look at the Canadian architecture, as I say, the opportunities are not so many as we have it in Europe. I find the average, the average housing is a very simple house that might not even have an architect behind. I'm not saying that it's a kind of prefab market as you will see in the States, but somehow is a kind of sets of very simple building system. I think one of the missed opportunity that Canada has in respect, if you will say, to North Europe countries in relation to really creating a kind of sense of a specific architecture is the issue of climate. And I think there has not been a kind of, I will not say aesthetic, but somehow that is really much connected to that. Even here, it's very strong. Like, we now, unfortunately, we have also the climate change is happening, so we have much less snow. But you can imagine that some winters, I remember 2010, I think we had, or 9, we had 9 meters of snow during the winter in Montreal. So it means that basically the landscape is like asphalt actually disappear, is all a white city. So I think there will be an opportunity to think architecture very differently in this condition. And somehow I don't see that yet as a... There are some very sophisticated architects who are working on this, but I'm saying the average. And then, obviously, in the city center, in downtowns, you have the pressure of economical models and speculation that are not different from what you have in other cities. And so the quality of this high-rise building is relatively specific. I think there are some topics instead that I think are a kind of forte of and for example, Banham was referring to in his book, really Montreal has a megastructure and even, you know, some of the building that were built in the 60s and 70s here in Montreal really has an example of this. And this, I still see some contemporary project that has this capacity of understanding scale in a very different way of like how we will understand or manage in Europe. So there are some buildings that have an incredible strength in connecting the underground city that here is very present because of the climate to public city underground. So, and it's not only the subway system, it's really a kind of commercial and, you know, leisure activities to a kind of semi-public ground floor, to then a private building on the top. But all these manage to a kind of scale of a very large building with maybe even, you know, infrastructure like highway passing through and so on. So
That's really interesting, actually. You can see some of that Canadian influence in... We were doing some work recently in Canary Wharf in the financial district of London, which was originally built by a Canadian developer, and all of the kind of first phase involved underground passages basically to enable people to move around in a kind of way that was isolated from the climate and isolated from the elements. I just wondered, it's kind of about the only place you really see that in London, and that I think has been eased a little bit now. But,
that's, I find, was one of the strengths here, and there are some good contemporary architects that are working on this. The university campus are often very urban, so that's the other things that I find interesting in respect to, you know, an American model where you will have this very isolated. So again, they have to work as a system of buildings where also, again, there is still a kind of it's part of the city, so you have also other things going on. And so how you identify all this building as part of the kind of university campus, but at the same time not alienating the rest of the population. So that's, to me, is another interesting question, because the scale of this, especially, for example, in Montreal is, after Boston, like say Cambridge, is the North American city with more university students. So, you know, the population of students is very big, but also these institutions are very big and are in the core, in the center of the city, not far off. So that's the other things that I find interesting has a kind of model here. And then you have a kind of interesting new generation of that are really trying to develop like urban models, maybe more sort of like single family houses, or based also on a kind of ownership that is very much about kind of cooperative model here in Montreal. So to really come up with a kind of different way of sharing housing. These, I would say, are the three things that I find that maybe if you will talk with a Canadian will not put on their list, but for me that I find fascinating coming from another continent.
Well, that's a really nice insight for us coming from another continent as well into the Canadian architectural landscape. I guess just the final thing we're kind of just interested in, you know, we're calling ourselves architecture masters at home. Just kind of interested in how people are adapting and changing. You presumably on a sort of daily basis worked from the centre. Are you in Montreal now under the same kind of lockdown as we are? Are you all working from home, and how are you coping with that?
Yeah, here we are all at home. I think as probably the majority of the globe at this point. At the CA was a fairly easy transformation. Actually, we did it basically over a weekend, because I think already many of the people work in a kind of digital connected way and so on. So, and we work in a very collaborative mood anyhow, so it has been fairly easy. But I would say we are each one isolated in their home. So I think as everybody is discussing now, it's more and more crucial to understand what home is, and somehow I think the basic things that architecture, or let's say modern architecture, always had had in mind, like light, air, I don't know, this kind of roof use or terraces and so on, suddenly become evident why they were always thought in that way. I would say the challenge here is that, let's say this kind of North American city, and Montreal is not so much like this, but this North American city really built around car, I think demonstrates also his weakness in this moment of like having kind of small sidewalks and these kind of things where people needs to be spread out in just even in this kind of walking around the block. So the nice things of Montreal is that of also many of the Canadian cities is that are built with a kind of back alley, and this back alley have become extremely pleasant to use as a kind of a multiplication of you know, paths through the city. So I guess here is very like Canadians are very disciplined, so the government has given you know, the advice to stay home and so on. There was never really, you know, we don't have as in Italy, let's say, drone or police or Chinese you know, sensors on the door. Everybody is very respectful of limiting his individual freedom to create a kind of community positivity. I think the challenge has been, and as has been in all the other countries you've seen, very much for these houses for elderly, and where the majority of cases has been concentrated there. And to me, again, beside the sadness of all this, is also to question when we will come out of this. You know, this I worked on a show some years ago, was called Imperfect Health, and was already there. This was in 2011, and there was actually all a section about epidemics, but one of the other section was actually about aging, and we were already challenging there this idea of a kind of segregation, and the idea of building for specific type of peoples, and so we see now the consequences in a very clear way of like deciding to confine this fragile population altogether, and how vulnerable is that decision ultimately for them and for society at large. So I think the big change to me will be of like, which is the kind of collectivity that we want to build in the future, and which are this kind of relationship we want to build. We see the missing support, kind of system of support in the moment that you live alone, or you live that you don't have someone who will really help you. We see the fragility that this is all based on, you know, private. Somehow it is a bit absurd if you know, the, let's say, Uber Eats become the way we will all have to rely on. So we have seen even more strongly, I think, through the digital and which are the powers that are coming out, and I think this is a kind of alert for the future.
Lots of issues for architects to solve. Yeah, absolutely. That's great. Thank you so much, Giovanna. You've been listening to Architecture Masters at Home. I'm Owen Wainhouse.
And I'm Tamsy Thompson.
Thanks for listening.